75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Welcome to the UFO Files, and we're back from the Flamingo Hilton on the beautiful Colorado River in Laughlin, Nevada. Basically, we talk about the paranormal as well as on the show, and we have an interesting guest who has a booth here. And Mary, why don't you go ahead and give us your website and the name and the whole thing here so people can contact you, and we'll do it again and warn people that they're listening on the radio and not on the web, that they can go over to our website, jerrypippin.com, and we'll have a link to your website and also a photo of you being interviewed along with the interviewer. But anyway, Mary, go ahead and give all your information for our listeners, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. My name is Mary Eberspatcher, and my website is www.ancientsounds.com.
Ancientsounds.com. And I'm going to get into that here in just a second. But first of all, you do something that's kind of interesting. I've heard people talk about it here at the convention already, at the hotel and in the elevator and other places. Why don't you explain to people what you do? You do some kind of sonic massage or something?
I've never heard it put that way, but that's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah.
What I do is I do sound healing. I tone into people's bodies. I use breath, and I do energy rebalancing work, and I use sound and breath and body work.
And what's involved with that? I mean, you do it right there in a public place, so it's not necessarily anything revealing.
No. Well, actually, that's not necessarily true. A lot can be revealed.
Well, maybe we'll start hanging around your booth more often.
Well, it would probably be fun, Jerry.
it sounds like it. No, seriously, though, this is a pretty good therapy. Why don't you explain to the audience what you're doing?
Well, I'm working on multi-levels. I'm really working with the etheric bodies, the physical body, and the emotional bodies when I'm working with you. And my fingers are very kind of deep and probing, and they really move energy. And I also use sound to move energy. And the sound that I use is of a seventh dimensional frequency or higher, depending on the person's ability to receive it.
Well, now, the sound, is it an apparatus or something you hold over somebody, or is it music they listen to? What is the deal?
No, I use my voice.
Your regular voice. You don't have to use anything electronic. So
No. So
you'd be using these probing fingers on me.
Yes.
And then you do what with your voice?
I tone into your body, into your crown, or into an area of your body where there might be some energy block that you might have, or a tumor, or I can give you a really wonderful story. Last year here at the conference.
I'd like to hear this, right.
Okay. Last year here at the conference, there was a woman who came to me the last day of the conference, and she has rheumatoid arthritis that she's been on very heavy-duty drugs for over 5 years. And she was just in a lot of pain and just really needed help, and we did a healing with her. And we never know what spirit is going to bring about in a healing, but this year she came up to me, and she said, "I really want to thank you. Last year, you did a healing with me, and I went home. And when I got home, I had felt that my arthritis was gone. And I went to my rheumatologist and told him that I wanted to get off my medications. And so he said, no, you can't do that because, you know, it'll take over a year to get rid of the flare-up if you do that. And she went back home, and she meditated a while, and she decided that she was really finished with the arthritis. She went off her medications, and she's been off medications for a year now, and her rheumatoid arthritis is in total remission.
And this is all due to what you were able to do here at this conference last year.
Yes, well, she attributed it to the healing that I did and the sound work that I did with her, and I believe that she's probably right.
Well, I'm sure you do, and you're probably correct on that. I know you've worked on several people here at the conference, and they all seem amazed.
Yes, I'm known as the Magic Hands, but the sound work that I do is the most phenomenal thing that I really do. It's just kind of vast and ancient. And
how did you get into it? I mean, how did you get that started?
Well, I think, you know, I personally have a belief that I've been here for lifetimes, and I believe that one of my ancient talents is sound. And sound is very ancient. It's one of the most ancient healing modalities that there is, Jerry. And back in 1999, I was here at the conference, and one of the people at the conference was taking a trip to Egypt. And I went on that trip, and I was told that I would receive my memory or be reunited with my sound. And so I went to Egypt and went through the whole trip and had all this faith that it was all going to happen. And I kind of felt the lightning bolt might hit me, but it didn't. And so when I came back home, I thought, oh, well, maybe nothing happened. And 6 months later, one of the participants in the conference sent me a picture, which I think you might post on your website. And I'm inside the King's Chamber.
Yeah, in fact, it is posted on the website in this interview right now, that people can go over there and listen to it. They're right there by the introduction on how to click onto it. And tell us a little bit about that picture and the King's Chamber. This is very, very interesting.
Oh, it was so powerful to be in there. We were doing a ceremony, and I was inside the sarcophagus, which is inside the King's Chamber in the Great Pyramid. And I was toning in the ceremony that we were doing. And when someone took the picture, you can see...
Before you go any further, when you go into a place like this in Egypt, a pyramid, and you say you're toning, were you with a group of people?
Oh, yes, I was with a group. It was a conference that was over there, and I was doing body work and opening the conference with sound every day. And so we were doing ceremonies in the Great Pyramid, and someone snapped a picture, and in the picture there happens to be a ball of white light above my crown chakra. And it's very clear to me, anyway, that I'm absorbing some kind of vibration, reacquainting myself.
Now, were you aware this was happening at the time?
No, I was unaware. I knew.
Like you say, you thought you might be hit by a bolt of lightning, and nothing happened as far as you knew, but it happened because a photograph shows it.
Yes, a photograph showed it, and I also was given. Two independent people came up to me at a conference I was at 2 days before I left for Egypt, and they both asked me if they could give me messages, and both of them said I was going to receive a gift when I went to Egypt, and one said I would receive a rod or a staff. And in Egypt is like the home of sound. I don't know if you know that. In Saqqara, they have a whole sound healing temple, and it's the home of sound. I mean, sound has been here forever.
So this goes back to ancient times for sure.
Well, you know, I think there's a rumor that this whole earth was created with a bang. So
the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. So there you go. We might have been created from sound, and we certainly know sound destroys, and I can attest to the fact that sound heals.
I wonder, you know, when you do this. You do it with your voice, naturally. How does that work exactly? I mean, do you have a set standard of tones, or does it just come to you as you're doing it?
It just comes to me when I do it. I actually have two CDs that I've created. I also do bath salts that I tone into, because crystals will hold frequencies of sound. And when you release them into the water amplifies the sound, so you're really like taking a sound bath. What I'd like to really share with your viewers and your listeners, viewers, that we're being bombarded all the time by sound waves. The sound waves from satellites, from microwave energy, electromagnetic energy, these are unheard sounds that you have no control over, and you're being bombarded all the time. Well, one of the things I believe the sound that I do is to help, to support, is to neutralize that, because it really takes your body out of harmony, out of its own, it creates like a chaotic a chaotic sensation in your own etheric and physical harmony in your body.
Well, I mean, I guess it's the reason they call it a primal scream and things like that, is a, you know, sounds are very basic.
Yeah. Yes, they are. And they've been used forever. In all of the ancient cultures, sound has been part of their process of healing, part of their trance, part of their ceremonies. They've found ways of creating sound with conch shells, with trees, and all sorts of ways of creating vibrations, because the ancient ones knew how powerful sound was.
Now, what is the significance exactly, and that you feel, of this thing happening to you in the pyramids at this certain place?
Well, I feel that I received a sound from the ancient time, at that time, that I could facilitate people to in their healing process, to realign their DNA, to help to bridge the gap. There's a lot of controversy now and a lot of speculation that the frequencies of Earth are changing and the frequencies of humans are changing. And if that is the case, then sound will help them to bridge that that frequency jump that they're doing. And I believe that that's part of what I'm here to help with.
And when you were in Egypt around the pyramids, and we've done lots of shows about the pyramids over the years, and whether or not they're, Egyptian, or they were some other source earlier, and on and on and on. Did you have any special feelings that you picked up?
Yes, yes. As a little girl, I used to imagine that I was in Egypt during the time the pyramids were built. And I had no idea about when or anything then. I was just a child. But when I was in Egypt, it was just amazing. And I could really feel that I had participated in building those pyramids with sound and crystals. I believe that harmonics are what raised those megalithic rocks into place. Because if you have enough sound, if you had 1,000 people toning with a crystal bowl.
So they were literally doing it with their own vocal cords.
I believe so. I believe that the people of the ancient ones had that kind of power, yes. And I believe that's the kind of power that my voice now has. That's the kind of frequency.
When did you finally discover that you had this ability?
Oh, well.
And how? That's the real thing I'm getting to.
And how? Well, basically, people tell me I have it. I started working with someone a long time ago.
I mean, you just don't wake up one day and start toning.
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't. Okay. Actually, I went to a workshop with a man called Tom Kenyon, and he does the crystal bowls, and he channels. He channels beings from the fourth dimension to Venus, so he says. And I just loved his work, and I loved the sound that he was producing. And I started doing chair massage at his workshops for a year and a half. And I got this little message that he had, my little voice inside, as we all have sometimes, that said, Tom has a message for you. So literally, I went up to him and I said, I hear you have a message for me. What is it? You know, he's going,
well, that's nothing like the direct approach.
Yeah. And he goes, well, I don't know. And it turned out that after working with him for a year and a half, that sound that lived inside of me up to that point in dormant started to be awakened and come alive. And then someone brought me a crystal bowl, and I started using a crystal bowl in my practice, and I didn't know I had a voice. And then all of a sudden I started toning with the bowl, and I started finding out that my voice and the bowl were moving together. They were like synchronized together. They wove together. It was just amazing. And people were just amazed by my voice. They thought it was, they didn't know what it was. I'll be in a room and people will hear me toning and they'll look around looking for an instrument or something and it's my voice. And they're just amazed. And it has overtones and the harmonics, and it's quite amazing. Actually, I can give you a sample.
You do have CDs of this too.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear it.
Okay.
Incredible. I feel better already.
Well, you should, Jerry.
No, that's it, and that comes right out of your voice. That's neat.
I'm kind of holding it down because there's
other people here.
Yeah, but if
that's one way for us to get a crowd at this booth.
Well, let's do it louder then. But no, the sound can be really powerful, and if we set an intention, that's really the basic of all healing is intention. You know. If you have an intention, I have another wonderful story. I work.
You mean an intention like I want to be cured or whatever?
Well, they actually have to really know and intend to heal, and then they can. I worked with a man. He broke his arm in three places. He got it stuck in a brake wheel. He was a railroad engineer, and he cracked his wrist. He broke. I can't remember the name of this bone, and I should know it since I'm a massage therapist, but I can't remember it. But he broke the bone in half. It severed in half. On his forearm, and he had a hairline fracture of his wrist. And I spoke to, it happened on Sunday, he was in the hospital on Sunday, and on Monday, his whole body, his arm was bound to his body because they thought they might have to reset it with pins. And so we did a healing on it over the phone. He put the phone to his arm, and we did I did sound on his arm. And then the next night he called, and I did a meditation that I do with sound and color. And he went to the doctor on Friday, and this was on a Tuesday night that we did that. And on Friday they took x-rays, and the hairline fracture was completely gone. The wrist had started to heal. And the doctor kept looking from one x-ray to the other.
There was a mistake. This can't be the right x-ray. Right.
And they didn't have to do surgery on him, and they actually were able to put him in one of those rubber, inflatable cast. And then the next Friday when he went, his wrist was completely healed, and the bone that had been severed in half was healing without a bump or a lump, and the doctor was amazed. He said, "You're not even going to have a bump on this bone." And he was really amazed, and in 3 weeks this man was back to work.
That's an incredible story.
Great belief. I mean, his intention and belief, I could feel the bones mending while I was working on him because he had such focus and such intention.
So really, it's up to both parties, you and the other person.
Yes, he made me look really good.
Let's find out a little bit more about some of the things. You obviously believe in reincarnation. You think you were around.
Oh, I'm sure I was a star. I come from a star system. I'm sure. When I was a little girl, I used to tell all my friends, I said, you know, my mother gave birth to me, but really I'm adopted. I'm a star. I couldn't have been more than 4 or 5 years old. Had no comprehension.
And then you went to Egypt and you saw all these things and got some incredible experiences there, and you put that to use.
I've been to many places, and I've been blessed with so many amazing experiences. I was able to see the portal. There's actually a stargate in southern France that I got to visually see.
Now, you were actually there, and you saw what coming in and out of that portal.
Well, there was a little star being. I call them star beings because I really refuse to use the word alien, because I believe we're all connected in the universe and the galaxies and beyond. So generally, they communicate with me a lot, but I see the light. I mean, they have different frequencies, just like we do. We're very dense here on Earth, and you start going out into different dimensions, and the frequencies are less dense. And so you get to a place where you don't have to be in a craft anymore. You can just be light and move around like light. So usually the beings that contact me are the light beings. So they're just light. And they send messages to me with pulsations, actually. It's quite interesting. They form very different kind of geometric forms. And then there are like laser beams that move from one light to another, and those laser beams pulse. And I'm sure that's a communication and a healing that they're doing. Or they're actually, I believe that they're encoding me with information that helps me on this plane to help other people.
And when do you see this? At night or in the daytime?
At nighttime. And also when we were in Egypt, we went to the pyramids at dawn and almost got arrested, by the way. Don't do that. It's not a good thing. they came out with guns, like one of those, whatever those big machine guns.
Yeah, AK-47, probably.
I don't know. They came out on their camels. But we were at the pyramid, and you're not supposed to be, at dawn. And I saw the thing that you see in the picture, this like ball of light that's on my crown chakra. They were all around the pyramid, and at dusk I could see them with my naked eye. It was just amazing. And it was also amazing to see how the sun hit the Sphinx, because you could tell that Ra, which is what they call the sun god, is, and why they would call it is because it's like raw energy that was like coming through the Sphinx. And I'm sure that that was used for transforming things, and the Sphinx was some kind of a receptor. So I started getting a lot of memories, but these are all kind of very metaphysical, etheric kind of things. I have no proof. I couldn't, you know, I mean, they're just thoughts that I had of memories that I had. And
now the significance of going to the pyramids at dawn was what, other than getting weapons pulled off?
Well, we were trying to see what we could see, what kind of energy fields there were there at dawn time. And I went with three other people, and they were researchers. And I just wanted to tag along, so they let me tag along. But I was able to see they call these little balls of light anomalies, and I was able to see them when they were just all around the pyramids on the outside. And then the sun, when it was like, it was just an amazing, I cried actually, it was so moving when I saw the sun kind of, you know, the Sphinx just pulling the new sun into its eyes. It was just amazing, and I knew that had a significance. And anyway, there are a lot of people who would agree with me, but they would have technical terms of telling you what it was.
Now, I want to get back to the portal and seeing the star. You're calling them star beings, or
star beings? Yes. Well, I was in southern France, and it was quite amazing because we weren't even supposed to be where we were. We landed there, and we were out on a veranda. And I tone to the stars because I believe they can hear that frequency because it's a high dimensional frequency. And so I tone, and all of a sudden in the sky appeared this little being that looked like a Tinkerbell. It was just the cutest thing. And it had this fun energy. I mean, not all of them have fun energy, but this had a lot of fun energy. And I was with another person, so she actually witnessed it as well. And it took her a long time to see that light, because not everybody's ready to see. So if you aren't ready to see, you won't see. But anyhow, there was this wonderful light in the sky, and it was playing around, and it was jumping around the sky. And it would jump from one place to another, and in between, you wouldn't be able to see anything in certain areas of the sky. And I kept looking, and I said, my gosh, Kathy, that's a crease in the sky. There's a crease there. And she could see it, and I could see it, and then she eventually did see the little star being. And when we had been driving up, I had been given information when I was in New Zealand from an elder there that if I ever saw a shape of rock that was shaped like the rock that he gave me, that was placed there by the gods. And that it was a landmark and very sacred, and so to keep my eye out for it. So when we were driving to where we were going, we actually ended up in Rennes-les-Bains. We were trying to get to Rennes-le-Château, but we ended up in Rennes-les-Bains. We were climbing we were driving up this mountain, like a mountain. It's a foothills, actually. And I could feel the energy shift, because I'm very kinesthetic and I feel things very easily. And I said, we're here. I said, we are here, Kathy. This is where we're supposed to be. And all of a sudden, I looked over to my left, and there was a formation just like the formation that he told me to look for. And I said, oh, my God. I said, this is very sacred. There's a landmark here. So when we saw this stargate, I realized that mountain or that formation was guiding the gods or the star beings in, and this is where the stargate was. And interestingly enough, when we went down the mountain, you couldn't see it coming up, but when you went down the mountain, there was another formation right next to it, and it was like a gate. formal.
So you're literally at a Stargate. Uh-huh. You're in the rock.
Yes. And
that was in New Zealand.
No, that was in France.
Okay, where Tinkerbell was.
That was where Tinkerbell was.
Okay,
but the Rock.
Sure I had the right story.
Yes, well, the Rock was given to me by someone in New Zealand.
Okay. And then you saw it in France. I'm a little thick. I finally figured it out.
Well, I'm jumping back and forth, but, you know, I know we don't have that much time, and I have, like, lots of stories. I mean, I could tell you lots of stories, but.
Well, I love stories. give me another one.
Well, I was in Hawaii. And I, a year before I went to Hawaii.
You probably have a frequent flyers card.
I wish I did. I always get those cheap flights where they don't give them, but it allows me to travel more. But I was in Hawaii at a conference doing chair massage. My massage has taken me many places. I've worked almost everywhere I've went. I'm kind of an international healer, you know.
That's the reason we have you on the show.
Yeah. So I went to Hawaii, and a year before I went, I knew we were going to go on a dolphin swim at this conference. And I kept getting these messages that they were going to take me home. And I thought, you know, I'm kind of literal. I'm dense. And I think, oh, I'm going to die. Well, okay, that's a good place to go. With the dolphins, why not? But then I realized about 6 months into getting this message that they probably weren't talking about me dying, and I didn't understand it. But forever I've had a vision in my mind, a memory, it feels like, or could be a fantasy, who knows, of temples that were under the water. And I've always felt like I could access those temples and I could breathe in water and breathe out of water at the same time, and I had that ability. And if you believe that you're interdimensional, then you could, and I do believe I'm that, so I probably do. Anyway, so I've always had this imagination about these temples. So I went to Hawaii, we went on the dolphin swim, and that was actually the first time I saw a star being, was in the hot tub in Hawaii in the Big Island, and they were pulsating messages to me, and I knew they were healing me because I really needed healing at the time. And that was my first conscious experience of seeing.
Healing physically or mentally or what?
Physically and emotionally. Mm-hmm. They were preparing me to do the work that I'm doing. That there's a lot of preparation for what you do here. I mean, this plane is real dense compared to other dimensions, and so you have to kind of be prepared, and they help you to do that if you make a decision to do that. So, and that was a decision I've made, is that I would give service to people here.
So our listeners, you could actually do this stuff on the phone, too.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And so I do have information. You have a website. We have a link there. They can go over there and find out about
that. Yes, they can. And there would be a phone number that they could call, a voicemail number, and then I would get back to them, yes. And to finish the story of Hawaii, are you interested?
Yeah, I wonder. Oh, yeah, I'm interested.
So we went out dolphins swimming, and we were in the water, and the dolphins weren't coming around, and I got this little mental message that I needed to go back to the boat, and that when I went back to the boat, everyone would follow, and the dolphins were going to circle the boat and bring cohesion to our group so that we could, you know, experience this experience. So I went back to the boat, and sure enough, everybody came back to the boat, and sure enough, the dolphins got in a line. They really were in a line and circled the boat. It was quite amazing. And then they moved the boat, and we were on this big trimaran. So the next spot, everybody was getting on their snorkels and getting ready to go into the water to swim, and I get this message that I'm supposed to stay on board, and I was really disappointed. But I thought, okay, I just need to follow the guidance. So I stayed on board, and I stood there, and I watched the dolphins swimming within 5 feet of every person out there. And there was 40 people on this trip. And they were swimming and jumping and spinning and having a good time. And I was just delighted to see these little beings. You know, I was just delighted. And all of a sudden, there was a shadow that was being cast over the ocean from the sails. And that ocean opened, literally opened up, and there were the temples that I've always seen in my mind, in the water. They were right there, and I feel that that was probably a portal. And I had confirmation of this 2 years later in the Yucatan.
I love the story. I mean, I love the way we're doing it. If you were weak in geography, you won't be when this is over. No, I think this is great.
I know, it was so, I've had so much fun. So anyhow, I was in the Yucatan, and a woman by the name of Joan Ocean, who does dolphin swims over in Hawaii, her boyfriend at the time, they wrote a book, and he was an artist, and he painted pictures of things that they saw when they were swimming with the dolphins. And I had a chance to peruse the book, and I saw those temples in his book, and I had a chance to meet him in the Yucatan.
Well, this is 2 years later, probably.
Later, yeah. And he told me that those were temples that they had seen when they were swimming with the dolphins. And so it wasn't just my imagination that the ocean had opened up, and I was able to see a portal.
So literally, the temples probably were or were not on the bottom of the ocean.
I believe that they are there. I believe there's a portal there into another dimension. I think that there are dimensions under us as well as above us. So
I just wanted to get the clear picture there. And
I'm stretching people's imaginations here.
That's what this show is all about, and we like to make sure they understand what we're talking about. And before we close today, you've got to give your website again, telephone or information, at least your name and all of that, so people will know who they're talking to, because I don't care where you're listening to us, and on the web or on the radio, any place around the world, she'll probably be there.
Yeah, probably. It's not real hard. it's not real hard to move
I'm
in.
I'm almost afraid to ask you where you're going next.
Well, actually, Palm Springs, actually.
Okay.
my next big trip, I'm being called to actually Ireland and Scotland, so I don't know quite how I'll do that.
The mental messages or your voices or what?
Well, they're more mental. I don't really hear voices, but I guess on some level I do, because they seem to be words to me. They seem to be guidance to me. Like, I was told I had to create sound baths. And what I did is I tone into bath salts so that people can take baths in sound frequency. And I'm already making you tired.
No, I had a tough day. It just flew in, and my arms are tired.
I bet they are. Would you like me to hold this for you? I'll heal you already.
Yeah, right. No, not at all. I was yawning, folks, in case you're wondering what she was talking about. Let's pick this up here again. You're talking about sound baths. They actually jump in a hot tub or something?
Well, no, you put them in your own bath. There's sea salt and Epsom salts that I put essential oils in, and then I tone into them.
And you buy the CD and listen to the CD while you do?
It's a good thing to do that, too. The CD will have the frequency. And I just really want you to the public to understand that right now sound has become a very important healing modality, and the reason is because that we're really being bombarded with a lot of sound pollution, and it's not what you can hear. You can't hear what you're being bombarded with, but your body is feeling the effects of it. You're really in chaos, and if you can bring your body back to harmony, you can be far more productive and really really live more in your potential.
Now, you have another story for me, and then we're going to have to wrap the show up.
Another story? Oh, what story would it be? I got deported into New Zealand.
They deported you? Why? From the rock that, or what? What happened there?
I was going on a little soul journey, and I went to Australia, and I was going to spend 2 months there. And they deported me.
Sent you back to New Zealand.
And New Zealand took me. But I had this incredible journey in New Zealand where I met this wonderful elder, Barry Breslin. And I was, you know, there's real ancient energy in a lot of these places. And there's a lot of people hear about Atlantis. But very few people hear about the culture of Lemuria. And
where is that, down in the South Pacific someplace?
Yes, and it's also a civilization that's lost, just like Atlantis was lost, but it was pre-Atlantean. Well, it's interesting. New Zealand has two islands. One of them was a volcanic eruption, which is the North Island. And the other island was actually split off from Australia. Okay, and they kind of came together, and they don't really touch. And it's just the most magical place to go. It's really magical when you go and you see the two oceans when they come together. And you visually see these two oceans coming together and the vibration that occurs when that happens. It's amazing. But I'm sitting there and I'm in New Zealand and I'm going, okay, now God or spirit or whatever, you brought me here. What is this all about, you know? And it was right before 2000, when they had the 2000, the millennium, and they were doing this big show. And one of the women, I mean, New Zealand embraced me like you wouldn't believe. It was like, oh, I was at home right away. And this woman that I had met there took me down to this rehearsal they were doing because CNN was filming when they were bringing the
New Year in.
And she was going to participate in it. And so she took me to the rehearsal, and I'm sitting there, and I'm still kind of in shell shock because I'm deported on the Christmas Day.
They did this on Christmas.
Well, on Christmas Eve, I was deported back into New Zealand. So
I had to find out what the deal was. Were you giving Santa Claus sound baths or something? I mean, why did they deport you? Or can you tell me?
Yeah, I can. Yeah. I was going to do some work over there, and I had a sign in my bags that said massage $1 a minute. And they saw that sign.
And the Australians thought, aha.
And I didn't have a work permit. And in my mind, you see, I don't think it's my work. I think it's my joy.
It's your mission.
It's my mission. So I don't think about, like, any work permits. I was just, you know, and I thought it was going to be my vehicle to meet people and to find out where my journey was supposed to take me. Because it was the new millennium, and I, you know, it was my spiritual journey. So it turned out my spiritual journey ended up, really, it was supposed to be in New Zealand. And that was really where I was supposed to go, but I wasn't smart enough. And so
You ended up going to Australia. Had to get you back to New Zealand.
I got there. I got there. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm going, now why am I here? And then all of a sudden, I'm looking, there's a Maori, one of the what they consider themselves to be indigenous people. Although there was a people before the Maoris called the Waitaha. But the Maoris were teaching the other people because they'd never let other cultures.
Now, the Maoris are in New Zealand, like the Aborigines are in Australia.
Yes, and there's a wonderful movie called Whale Rider, which would give you a little bit more about their culture. Anyway, they were doing the ceremony, and they were teaching the un-natives how to do it. And so I was watching this, and all of a sudden I got this realization that why I was there. And New Zealand is the archetype of the millennium, because what they've done is they brought the Lemurian energy, which is clearly the North Island, and the Atlantean energy, which is clearly the South Island in my imagination. And those two
makes sense to me.
Yeah, those two islands actually live in harmony. And it's like what we're here to do now is merge the heart with the mind. The Atlanteans were very mind and science oriented. And that's what you're doing in this interview, by the way. Most of yours is probably very science orientated, and I'm coming more from heart. And you're blending like this heart and mind kind of energy together, because that's important, because they both need to work together. We need the wisdom of the heart.
Now, you felt that New Zealand was really your calling at that point. And you're not going to tell me what your next calling is, but it may be Ireland.
Oh, it's Ireland or Scotland, and also it's the east coast of the United States. There are many places in the United States that I've been that are very magical, too. Mount Shasta, I went through a portal in Mount Shasta when I was there.
And where did you end up?
Oh, in another dimension where I was living in a lifetime with someone else. I was there doing a conference.
Was it a guy or?
Yes, it was a man, and we met at this conference, and we just had this immediate, like, instant, you know, like we knew each other. And except that I kept wanting to call him Peter, and his name was Gary. It was just kind of strange, and I was going, why can't I remember his name? And this right, and I was at WESAC right before I went to Egypt. And then when I came back from Egypt, I went back up to visit him because he was still staying in Mount Shasta. And we went to a place called Pluto Caves, and there's a portal in Pluto Caves. And we went there.
What do you do? You walk through it or what?
Well, you kind of get sucked through it, actually. I mean, it's solid rock. And
so you're standing outside of the rock, and the next thing you know, you're in someplace else.
We were holding hands, and the rock just seemed to kind of suck us in, you know. And I actually got a fungus on my eye from being that close to that rock. So, you know, like merged with that rock. And all of a sudden, we're in another life where we're together as a couple. I mean, we were living together. We were physically in this other world where we were actually together as a couple. And then I remember getting very afraid that I might not be able to come back. And the minute fear came in, I came back.
So you were just transformed into this other entity. In other words, you weren't there watching it.
No, we were there. We were transported through the rock. I mean, I felt myself going through the rock. I was very conscious of it. I know that sounds kind of weird, but I was very conscious of it, and so was he. It was so powerful, we actually couldn't physically talk about it.
Now, how did you get back? I mean, did you have a...
Afraid. You just get afraid and you come back.
Fear.
Yeah, fear. It was fear. The minute the fear came in, I was back in this dimension.
So in other words, what do you draw from that conclusion what lesson do you draw there?
I don't know if there's a lesson really, but I think my understanding of it is that we actually can be in more dimensions at one time. I think I have a belief, and I was able to maybe experience this belief, that we live in many dimensions at once, time as a spirit. That we're not just here, that there really is no such thing as time. You know, time is just a very linear thing that we use here in this...
I use it on the show, and I got about 2 minutes left.
So, but it, as a spirit, we have no time, and all time is one. So the past, the present, and the future are all now, and we're living in all of them at one time.
Well, let's go over, once again, you do these massages, and you call them sound baths.
Well, they're healing.
Okay.
I call it transitional healing, and I use energy rebalancing, sound, and body work. But I don't need to do that. I can do just the sound healings, and I can do them. I can do them over the phone. I can do them, you know, in person.
Well, you would check the website out and find out more about that. Why don't you give the website address for listeners on the radio?
Okay, it's www.ancientsounds.com. That's www.ancientsounds.com.
Ancient Sounds, of course, all one word.
Yes, all one word and all small letters.
Well, of course, and that's just like jerrypippin.com. And much to my chagrin, it's small letters and one word. But anyway.
You're so cute.
Well, thank you. Maybe we know each other in some other dimension. You never know.
That's probably true.
Thank you very much, folks. Check out our website, and she's on the normal paranormal page, and you can click over there and see the Egyptian picture, and that picture is incredible, and see how to get a hold of her and find out a little bit more about this.
And I really want to thank you, and I really want to thank all the listeners, and I hope you got a little taste of the sound, and if you want more, just give me a call.
Okay, thank you very much.
I want to take an opportunity to talk to you if you're an Elvis fan and you're going to Las Vegas, or you're in Las Vegas, or you're going, you know, at least sometime or another to be there again. You owe it to yourself, really, to go to the Elvis Aramo Museum. This is a fantastic place. It's located just behind the Frontier Hotel and Casino at 3401 Industrial Road in Las Vegas, not far off the Strip, really. You know, they have over $5 million worth of memorabilia on display at the museum. And Elvis Aramo is open from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. They have great exhibits, rare collector's items, and lots of fun, including live Elvis tribute shows every afternoon. Elvis Aramo is a must-see on your list if you are an Elvis fan. In fact, if you don't even think of yourself as an Elvis fan, you will be when you get through. It's a great place in Las Vegas to see the King. Yes, the King lives at Elvis-O-Rama Museum, Las Vegas, Nevada.
If you're looking for adventure, information, and entertainment on the internet, one stop fits all, JerryPippin.com. At JerryPippin.com, you'll find multimedia entertainment at its best. Almost 2 million people are enjoying hours of entertainment and information. Hit it now, www.JerryPippin.com.
River of Fear, the first book in a trilogy, contains just a few of the paranormal and UFO events that author Rod Davis and his wife have personally experienced. Rod surrounded them with mystery and action, which makes River of Fear a page-turner and an exciting read. River of Fear is a book you do not put down. Click on the link on our UFO page at JerryPippin.com for more about River of Fear, and you can buy it today for only $14.95. That's a savings of $5. River of Fear, reality fiction at its best.
This is Jerry Pippin, and we continue the UFO Files from the beautiful Flamingo Hotel on the Colorado River in Laughlin, Nevada. I have a very interesting person here with us from Wales, Matthew Hurley. How are you, Matthew?
I'm fine. Very well, thank you.
You had a very interesting lecture here, and you have a great book called Alien Chronicle.
That's right, yes. I spoke on Monday basically about the depiction of UFOs in historical artwork, going back into prehistorical times.
And this book actually has lots of pictures and lots of things in it.
It does. It has about 150 images, many of them in color. They range from frescoes, oil paintings, artworks on cave walls, petroglyphs, artwork on rocks, many types of artworks going back through history, all depicting UFOs.
We have done a lot of shows over the history of UFOs, and evidently they've been here since time immemorial.
That's right. I mean, the earliest examples that I've come across are depictions of UFOs on cave walls from 25,000 BC, and then there are many written accounts going back into classical Roman times up to about 400 BC, and then they go through all the centuries up to modern times.
And when you found these caves, the pictures on the cave walls, was that in Europe or where?
There are a mixture of places. The oldest ones are in North Africa. There are many examples in Europe, particularly in France and Spain. And there are also many examples in Australia and also South America and North America.
And there have been, of course, references to what could be UFOs in literature all along as well.
That's right. There are many references to UFOs in ancient literature. For example, the world's religions use metaphors such as chariots and flying vehicles and so forth in the Bible. And a lot of people feel these could be references to UFOs, ancient ET spacecraft visiting Earth and having contacts with humans.
And we, of course, have talked about that book that was out many decades ago called Spaceships of Ezekiel, and that's just an example of that.
That's right. That's quite a well-known example. Ezekiel had this vision of this large wheel, well, a wheel within a wheel, and a number of people have looked at that, they've read about it, and they've concluded that it could well be an extraterrestrial spacecraft. There's a recurring theme in the Bible of beings coming down and talking to mankind, and also vehicles coming down, and there are a number of descriptions, of which Ezekiel's is probably the best, the strongest example of a possible alien spacecraft.
We're talking with Matthew Haley, and of course the name of the book is Alien Chronicles, and of all of these early paintings, any of these paintings by famous artists?
There are a number of paintings by well-known artists, but I think, to be honest, a lot of the public wouldn't have heard of these artists, but within the art world they are well-known. For example, there's one called the Madonna with St. Giovanni, and that was painted by Lippi, who's a reasonably well-known Renaissance artist, and there's another one by Carlo Crivelli, painted in 1486.
Is there a similarity in these pictures?
Well, the similarity, the recurring theme is that you have an airborne object in the sky, which does look remarkably like a UFO. And in the Madonna with St. Giovanni, you have a man and a dog on the ground looking up at the object as well. So the artist is sort of affirming the presence of the object by having these two characters on the ground as well.
How did you get interested in this? Are you an art major or a researcher or what? Are you an artist yourself?
No, I'm not an artist, actually. I'm quite a poor drawer. I can just about draw a cat.
Well, you and I have something in common there. I'm not sure I could do the cat. I guess I could do the little stick man with the little ears.
Yeah, I could probably do that with some glasses as well. But no, I've no arts qualifications at all. I think the main thing you need in this is curiosity and interest, and if you have the interest, you have the drive, and that then leads you on into research. I started my research after seeing a speaker called Bob Dean speak in England in 1996, where he showed UFOs from an historical perspective and showed some of these artworks. So that's where it started for me, and then I carried on my own research.
Yeah, we had Robert Dean on a little earlier, so it's always interesting. When you can get the book through your website, of course, and we have a link for that on our website at jerrypippin.com. Why don't you give your website address?
Okay, it's www.ufoartwork.com, and the book can be ordered through there.
And for people who aren't on online, is there an address or something they can order the book, or is it available in bookstores, or...?
They can order the book through Hidden Mysteries, who are based in Texas. I can give you their phone number now.
Okay, that would be good. We'll get to that, and maybe we'll give people a chance to go ahead and get a pencil and paper to follow that up, because the book is pretty incredible. Like you say, the color pictures and the paintings are very, very good. It had to cost a little money to get something put together like that. Do you have the address yet or a phone number?
No, we don't.
Okay, we're going to be looking for it in a minute. Before we continue here with that phone number, let me ask you a couple of the questions about this. Is it predominantly the artwork European, or is it all over the world, as you said, or is there American artists, or what?
The artwork's from all over the world. As I mentioned earlier, there's examples from Europe, there's examples from the Americas, and there's examples from Australia and Russia, so it's all over the world. There's no one particular area.
It's pretty universal then. Okay, what is that phone number for people if they need our address or whatever they need to do?
Okay, the address is Hidden Mysteries, 22241 Pinedale Lane, Frankston, Texas, 75763, and the telephone is 903-876-3256.
You can call there and get the information, and as I said, it's on our website as well. Now, Matthew, which one of these paintings jumps out at you, or is there one that jumps out?
The one that would jump out to me is the one I mentioned earlier called the Madonna with St. Juvenino.
With the dog and the boy.
With the dog and the boy, yeah, looking up at the sky at this object. And the artist depicts a UFO. It's a classic saucer shape, and he depicts it with lines that emanating from the object as if it's emitting a lot of light. And of course, when people see UFOs today, quite often they're emanating a lot of light, a lot of power, and a lot of energy. And it seems that this artist was recreating what people see today in an ancient artwork.
So you actually got the interest in this when you saw Robert Dean speak back in 1996, and were you interested in that? Well, you had to be interested somewhat, or you wouldn't have went to that lecture.
That's right. I've been interested in the UFO since the age of 10, and I went to my first conference when I was 23, and I saw Bob when I was 26, and he showed some of these artworks in that lecture, and that's what really got me started. And I started looking in books and magazines, searching on the internet, and I quickly amassed several interesting images, and I created my website, ufoartwork.com. A lot of people started visiting the site, sending me things that they found, and it quickly snowballed into a large portfolio of anomalous images.
Any modern-day artists doing paintings that show up with UFOs?
Oh, there are artists all around the world that see UFOs. There's sometimes a connection between people interested in the subject and those having an artistic streak, and there are a number of people here today who paint UFOs from their own experiences and also from their own imagination.
Well, there's a lot of that, of course. Everybody says, well, you know, you don't have a camera. Well, can you draw what happened? If they asked me, I'd be in trouble, as I said earlier.
This is it. I mean, you know, people see UFOs today, and they sketch what they see, or if they have a camera, they photograph it. Of course, hundreds or thousands of years ago, you wouldn't have had the technology such as a camera. So what they would do, they would record it on cave walls, on rocks, or on oil paintings on cave walls, and so forth.
the interesting thing about this entire subject that the people think, well, you know, it was 1947 before we ever heard of that, and here we're talking about literally hundreds of thousands of years.
That's right. There's this common misconception, I feel, within the subject of ufology that it all started in 1947 with Kenneth Arnold's sighting. But when people look at my book, they'll realize that there's been many sightings written down in history, a number by classical Roman historians such as Pliny and Julius Obsequies. These are respected, articulate, academic people from their times recording aerial phenomena.
Did you run across any photographs, well, of course, not photographs as much as artwork from the past, that's what you're really specializing in, but the point of this question is, in fact, were they always lights, or could you make out something? I mean, a wheel, we did talk about that.
Yeah, there's a number of illustrations in my book of actual sightings, and some of them do depict crosses. Crosses are quite a common theme occurring. Crosses on their own, and also crosses within a wheel as well. There's an example I've got of a coin from 1680, and it depicts a flying wheel, and there's like lights all around the rim, and there's spokes as well, and it literally looks like a flying wheel, and this was minted in 1680.
Matthew Hurley is our guest, and of course the book is Alien Chronicles, and it's on the website at jerrypippin.com, if you the link to his website, so you can order it. And Matthew, we're going to let you go in a couple of minutes, but before we do, let's get back to the flying crosses. I just had a UFO report last week on my program of somebody seeing a flying cross.
Yeah, crosses are quite a common occurrence within UFOs. It seems that the powers that be, who's ever behind these UFOs, may be playing around with our religious symbology. I mean, people have postulated, like I said earlier, the connection between religion and UFOs.
In fact, it's kind of difficult sometimes to tell which was first, the chicken or the egg, and this time whether or not this inspired the religious connotations in all the different world's religions or people just kind of attach it.
Well, as I said, there is this theme around all the world's religions, both East and Western, of beings coming down, educating mankind in sciences, engineering, and so forth, and then sending back up into the sky quite often in some sort of vehicle or craft. And this is also reflected in the artworks on cave walls and so forth.
Matthew, have you ever had a UFO experience?
I've had one UFO sighting which took place in England in 1994 in an area called Alton Barnes. I was actually on a sky watch with 10 friends, and we saw this red ball appear in front of us, hovering, pulsating at several cycles per second. It made no noise, about the size of a basketball. It hovered in front of us over a valley for about 10 seconds and then blinked out.
Matthew Hurley, I've enjoyed it, and we wish you a lot of luck on this book. It's very interesting. It's a great project, and by what I mean by great is it took a lot of work to put that together and to get it published, I'm sure.
It did take a lot of work, and I have to thank all the people that submitted images to me, because without their help, it wouldn't have been the book that it is today.
You got any other books in the future?
I'm considering doing one on the history of psychic phenomena from an artwork point of view. There are many illustrations of people levitating and having stigmata and experiencing various psychic phenomena. So that could be a nice sister book to this one.
It certainly would be. I look forward to that coming out. And when you do that one, we'll be in touch with you.
Okay, yeah, it'd be great to speak to you again. Thank you very much.
Matthew Hurley, the name of the book is Alien Chronicles.
If you're looking for adventure, information, and entertainment on the internet, one stop fits all, jerrypippin.com. At jerrypippin.com, you'll find multimedia entertainment at its best. Almost 2 million people are enjoying hours of entertainment and information. Hit it now, www.jerrypippin.com.
You're a small business owner, but you're not advertising. You believe that the economy is still stagnant, that consumers are hanging on to their money. You think maybe you'll spend a little on advertising once things start to pick up, but you know what? By then, it'll be too late. Your competitors will already be advertising and taking a big fat chunk of your market share. You'll have totally missed the boat. The train will have left the station, and there you'll be standing all alone on the platform, watching slack-jawed as customers pass you by. Why? Because they don't know you're there, because you didn't advertise, because you didn't think it was worth it. Every moment of every day, someone is buying something. People are shopping right this second, making choices, making purchases, and if you're not talking to them, someone else is. Advertising greases the wheels of commerce, fuels the engines of economic expansion, connects consumers with companies and buyers with sellers. Advertising. It works. Your competitors know this. Why don't you? A message from the Radio Advertising Bureau, Adweek Magazine, this radio station, and the famous Radio Ranch.